Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Today's video is brought to you by Predictable Revenue's service LinkedIn Outbound. Find out how we can leverage and grow your existing LinkedIn network to book meetings into your calendar at the link below.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Hicks, and today my guest is Bill Wooditch, and we're going to be talking about how fear of uncertainty is holding us back and why it shouldn't. There's a lot of uncertainty right now. Prospects aren't answering emails, trade shows that were your biggest source of business have been canceled. You suddenly have to manage and coach a team of 50 reps over Zoom. A lot of people are going to be fearful in this time, and for good reason. But if you don't find a way to resolve that fear, you're never going to move forward and back to success. So here to talk to us today about that fear and how to combat it is Bill Wooditch. Welcome, Bill.
Sarah, thank you very much for being on your show. It's an honor and a pleasure.
I'm really looking forward to it, Bill. To tell you guys a little bit about Bill, after spending a year at a dead-end job with a foreclosed future, Bill created his renowned always-forward mindset and forged his way from the impoverished backwoods of Western Pennsylvania to create a multi-million dollar company, which he continues to lead today. He's the author of Always Forward and Fail More, a Wall Street Journal bestseller. The hard-won lessons he shares in his book and keynotes are designed to shorten the distance between where you are now and where you're determined to go in the future. So Bill, your second book, Fail More, deals with a subject that will certainly resonate with a lot of people in the suddenly virtual world, like we talked about. So tell me a little bit more about that book and its contents.
I'll tell you a little bit by first doing a deep dive into one thing. The book really is about the function of the brain. And so I spent a lot of time thinking and working on, almost like a neuroscientist, I thought I was going to turn into one, about how the brain functioned. Because what was it about fear? Where did it start? Where is the origins of fear? And really, the essence of fear is the brain craves safety, because the brain's first and foremost job is to protect us, is to keep us safe. So for us, certainty is like brain candy. Our brain craves certainty. And you know this about life. There is no such thing as ultimate certainty. So it craves that thing to keep us safe. And that's the very thing we have to understand, where the source is from. And once we have the understanding, Sarah, we have that awareness, we have an obligation to do something about what we're now aware of.
Okay, so tell me about right now, there's a lot of uncertainty, and how the kind of uncertainty and the changes and the worries that people might be experiencing right now, how that kind of relates to the ideas that you have around fear.
You know, you look at fear and you think it's meant for our survival. It's an early warning system. And the important thing is that the fear is an ally or an adversary. It can protect us from danger, and danger, it's important, is the imminent threat from man, from insect, from reptile. That's true danger. But see, the brain doesn't know the difference. It treats all fear as imminent danger. You know, back in the day of the saber-toothed tiger, if we didn't band together, we could perish. So today, we take that saber-toothed tiger into our conference room. Mm-hmm. And we play fear through this florid imagination of all the worst things that could happen to us, those things that have happened and the things that might happen in the future. And we become stymied. We become stifled. We shrink ourselves into a box of what we think is comfort, because we don't want to stick our heads out there. We don't want to be vulnerable. You know, so we have to differentiate between fear, part of the imagination, and danger. Fear as an early warning system for imminent threat from man, okay, reptile, or insect.
Okay, got it. So we need to be kind of looking at the current circumstances and kind of trying to override our natural instinct and taking a look at it. Are we just fearful because of uncertainty, which is almost a given in life, or is there actual imminent danger that we need to kind of address?
You know, there could be too. And you talk about today and being topical with today. It's an emotional response. So mm-hmm. Fear is emotional. What we need to do today and tomorrow and the next day, and what we've always had to do to move forward, is take ourselves from the emotional stew of fear and come up to the rational thinking part, our brain, the prefrontal cortex, the CEO part of our brain. So look at the brain broken out into three parts. We're stuck today, especially in that instinct survival stage, where it's just instinct, it's just response. There's so much stuff coming across from the media. There's so much stuff coming to us that we're just overwhelmed by the emotional sway of what's happened and the worst possible case, because that's what is painted. It might be reality, but it might not. Mm. We need to come up to this part of our brain and say, what is it that's really happening? Where do I find my information? What am I going to import? And then what am I going to take as my truth and my reality? So the first thing, again, back to awareness, the brain's that protective mechanism. Today, we got so much stuff coming at us. We need to be able to discern by using that top part of our brain, prefrontal cortex, what is real danger, and it could be one and the same, and what is fear as imagination.
Got it. And I want to talk in a little bit for those of you listening right now. I know a lot of you are in sales. A lot of you are maybe sales reps, account executives, all the way up to sales leadership. So I do want to get kind of down into how this is really applying to you guys and kind of how you can combat that. But to give a bit of pretext to that part, Bill, I'd love to hear your story of how you kind of went from, as you say, the backwoods of Pennsylvania and how you got into sales and how you got where you are today.
You know, it's funny. I look back and I did a little research on where I grew up. It's a small town, Kane, K-A-N-E. It's hidden in the woods of the Allegheny National Forest in Pennsylvania. And it's known as the icebox of the nation. Not just Pennsylvania, the icebox of the nation. So in those frigid conditions, there were limited, constricted boundaries of where we thought as kids we could grow up to be. So for the most part, a lot of us ended up working in the local factories, the toy stores, the factories. We stayed pretty local because we didn't believe there was life outside of those confines. We thought we were really sequestered in that forest and there was nothing more for us. Some of us escaped into colleges and universities, and some of us did what I did. Grew my hair, smoked cigarettes, hung out with a rabble crowd, and was a total rebel without a clue. That forced me into a factory. So my forced and foreclosed choice, from not paying attention to life, from not being a student of life, from just wanting to exist and move through life in an inebriated state and being a rebel, sent me to a factory. Nothing, Sarah, can scare you more than seeing your future played out every day in front of you. Walking through that frigid snow on the way to work, punching in, punching out, being told what to do in rote fashion every day, punching three holes into a piece of wood for hours, and that was the existence of your day, and knowing that you put yourself there. Mm-hmm. You see, the one thing I'd like for your audience to take away right now is to think about regret. Think about regret, play it forward, and say, what is it that I can do now that can keep me away from the type of regret that at some stage in my life, I can't take the actions. I can't do those things that I could have done now. And boy, do I regret doing them. So for me, it was going to work in that factory, seeing my future played out every day in the same way. And I got a break. I got an opportunity. An opportunity looks like this. It's a window. It's always closing. You have to see it. You have to seize it. You have to make it yours. And my parents gave me a chance to go to college, to learn how to learn. I did. And that was my start forward of launching out of those backwoods. Learning was my lamp. It lit my way forward.
Awesome. Awesome. And so that kind of idea of the regret that you're talking about, I think you called it the fear of future regret. And so that's another thing that can kind of inspire fear in us but maybe something that we have a little bit more control over than we realize is the ability to stop that regret in the future. But as you're saying, it's a window of opportunity that's always closing. So we've absolutely got to take the bull by the horns right now. So maybe that's another thing for people to take away, salespeople, anyone else who's listening in the audience right now. You may have this regret a couple of months, a year, whatever down the line, if you were so fearful in this time that you didn't take the action that maybe you could have, or maybe you should have, because of course it's uncertain, but we've still got to power forward. And that's a great kind of segue. Bill, you then went into insurance sales, and that's where you kind of gained all your expertise as a salesperson. So tell us about that.
It was a forced choice because I didn't want to be a salesperson. When I mentioned the word sales and I think about it, it had this gut visceral reaction that it was something I didn't want to do because it was taking people's money and not really giving a value, and people didn't like you. And so that was important to me. When I came out of school, I wanted to be a manager. I mean, I spent a lot of time working to become a manager. So I wanted to be dropped down in a Fortune 500 company and be in charge. Life doesn't work that way. So fortunately, out of 86 applicants, I got the job in insurance. Didn't want to do it, didn't want to sell, but needed the income. Had no suit. My mother bought me a corduroy light brown suit that wrinkled really easy. It's the only one I had. Couldn't tie a tie. My brother had to tie it for me every morning because I stayed with him in a one-bedroom apartment. Had no money except for the $20 bills my mother gave me. She gave me 10, so I had 200 bucks. And I had an oxidized brown station wagon with no hubcaps. I remember that. Parked it next to Porsche's, you know, Rolls, all different cars of people who were doing those things that I wanted to do. So my first start, insurance, sales, two things I didn't want to do. And wow, that made all the difference in where I ended up going and how I embraced and loved the game as enrollment, not selling, as making the activity directed result and doing those things by winning hearts and minds that just changed the entire landscape for a lot of people and most important myself.
And there's a particular type of sales. Of course, we've talked up to this point about the fear of uncertainty, and that kind of exists, well, at many times, but right now, of course, there's been a big change in the markets, in the world, so there's uncertainty. But there's another kind of fear that salespeople are familiar with anytime, and that's the fear of missing quota. You've spoken to kind of learning about that fear and how to combat that fear. And I think that's something that kind of applies to both the fear of uncertainty and, of course, this fear that's ongoing for salespeople. So now that people's pipelines may have taken even a bigger hit and prospects may be even less responsive, and these salespeople are feeling the fear even more than ever, what can they do to combat that and kind of move forward?
First of all, I'm with you on that. The first time this thing hit, that we huddled around our producers and said, let's just limit the exposure. Let's just stop doing what we're doing. Let's just talk with people, but not push. And then I thought about it. It took about 3 days and let's push. Because by pushing, I mean this. Let's get out there, keep making the calls, tell people we're there. Don't try to sell anything. Just let them know we're here. Get in front of them, stay top of mind with them. And that's what we did to gain it, because the people that are answering the phone are going to be those people who will probably talk to you later. The biggest thing you have for you is confidence. If you don't have confidence, you're done. Confidence comes before competence. So before I want to know what you've learned and what you can do for me, I want to see if you're confident. So I look at this and I feel this. Fear, desperation, and greed are three things people don't want to partner with. Oh, they'll console it. Sorry you feel that way. But people don't want to partner with that. When you come up against your quota, when you're not making those calls and filling that pipeline every day, doing those things you don't want to do, getting that phone slammed down, knocking on doors, having rejection be your best friend, you're going to get behind. So at the end of the quota, you need to make it that quarter a certain sale, because you don't have 7. You don't have 8. You're not proposing 3 or 4, you're proposing 1. And that's a suspect, not a prospect. You haven't qualified him to the potential of being a client, and you got to make that sale. You get more desperate as every quarter goes by and your quota keeps getting bigger, because they expect more, we do, from you at that point. Your activity has to be at a certain level where that activity from suspect to prospect to client keeps you moving beyond quota, because quota to me is for average. You want to blow behind way beyond that. You want to be able to grow your lifestyle options to fit those dreams. You need to keep building your pipeline, and that means blow through your quota.
And you have an acronym that kind of you use. It's a great acronym. I want you to share it with everyone on kind of a way that salespeople can do what you're talking about, can kind of qualify from suspect to client, and how they can be moving forward and making the relationships and engaging the prospects. So tell us how you do that.
Well, one thing fear does is it can make us think that every conversation we have with someone who's willing to speak with us is a real opportunity, when in fact it's not. So the reason that most sales managers pull their hair out and most companies start to lose money is you're having a lot of conversations with people who are really suspects, who aren't going to buy your product. And they're going to use you. They're going to take your product and they're going to leverage it against someone else. So the acronym I use is QUALIFY. You got to be able to ask those questions of others, including, this is the relationship you have with your current provider. If I come in and I'm 10% better right off the bat, everything else is even, what do you do? Because our clients would do this. They would share that number, or they would tell us to sharpen our pencil. You've got to ask those questions right up front to qualify. Now, the U is the understanding. So you got to be able to understand the process, how they buy, what their biggest fear is. Sarah, your biggest fear to anyone is the comfort and the certainty of what The known is. People will stay with known mediocrity more than assumed brilliance because they know it. They're not going to lose their 401k. They're not going to lose their position. They're not going to lose their job by making a bad choice. You got to be able to answer their questions. That's the A in qualify. You got to be able to listen really, really well. Take the I and just hold it out here. You got to be able to follow up, and you have to follow up obsessively. If you do that, the why is you sell if and only if. Throughout this entire process of learning about their previous relationships, learning their dreams, their hopes, following up, bringing value, being confident. If they tell you something and go against it, you have to experience that. And that is the only thing you can't qualify in the entire process is the integrity of the buyer. You can't qualify that. Mm-hmm. But if you do everything else, you get about a 90% shot of knowing what you're going to be and where you have to be to get the order.
So if you're a salesperson out there right now listening, pause the episode, rewind it back that 30 seconds a minute, jot this down. So the qualify acronym is all the kind of steps that you need to follow to take this suspect to an actual prospect. So as Bill said, there are so many maybe potential clients that you think are potential clients that you're talking to because you're kind of, you've got happy ears, which of course salespeople often do, but use this acronym to actually really take a deep dive and see, yes, okay, they've taken that step from suspect to actual prospect. And then you can have a much better forecasting of your pipeline. You know, you can work a little bit harder, do some more activities if you're running behind, and then you're not going to be up against this fear of missing quota, which is only going to exacerbate the already existing fear of uncertainty right now. Bill, you also had ideas about kind of the human side that a salesperson needs to have, the kind of personal engagement that they need to have with that prospect. So let's dig a little bit deeper on that, on kind of the understanding piece and the kind of listening piece. And what is it that salespeople really need to do to engage on a human level with their prospects?
I'm going to give you what I think is really important. It's worked for me, and I know it will work for you. Is I lost my first 13 times when I got out of the car and treated people as a formula or a concept based on what I was taught. How to ask this question, when to ask this, and my mind just got all confused on, do I talk with this person or do I just throw up all this stuff that I think I know? And when I left those folders in the car, when I left those concepts in the car and started to meet and treat people as people, not concepts, asking them the most important question in sales first, where are you from? And asking them, how did you get here? Questions about them, not me. The I in anything will shut down the conversation because people fear that. They don't know you're still a threat. They don't want to listen. They're just hearing noise. And Everybody says relatively the same thing. Hit that on the head. Tell them, I know everybody's saying the same thing. I'm not the best at this. I'm not the best at that. And I don't do this very well. Well, what is it that you do, Sarah? Now they're listening. And now you go with your core competence. This, and this. Credibility, conviction, competence, and confidence. And you treat them as people. Maybe we're not the best provider for you this year, but we're not going anywhere. That works. It opens people's hearts and minds, but you can't look at the wallet. You look at the heart and you look at the mind. You're not for everybody and everybody's not for you. Know that, keep your pipeline growing and keep qualifying. That's the way to success in sales.
Mm-hmm. And that's incredibly important right now when a lot of your prospects maybe don't have budget anymore for what you want to sell them. But as Bill's saying, you've got to kind of stay top of mind by showing them that you're there, showing them that you've got that relationship that is beyond just wanting them to sign a check and moving on. And that's absolutely, yeah, it's going to contribute to them buying from you further down the line. It's going to kind of lessen that fear. One of the other kind of titles in a company right now that of course is going to be feeling a lot of fear and that also needs to inspire confidence are the managers and executives and kind of the C-suite. A lot of them may be managing completely virtually for the very first time and they need to combat fear as well. So Bill, how can these managers and leaders combat the fear in themselves, but instill the confidence in their people?
As a leader, you're going to be known much more for what you tolerate than what you ever accomplish. And you have to understand that people are reading your emotional bandwidth. The first thing that I did is to get out in front of this thing, put make everything remote. It's a little bit of a process. Make it all remote, but then let the people know they were safe. Let them know what we're doing, what we're not doing. We're not making these cuts. We're doing these things. We're doing this. So I embraced my people first. By embracing the people virtually, they were able to embrace the clients. Then the expectations went out there. I expect this, I expect this, I expect this. The reason you've got to manage expectations, you've got to manage them before people start to think, what's going to happen to me? If they think what's going to happen to me, they're not going to be out there taking care of your client. They're going to hunker down and try to do what's best for them. And it could be trying to find another job, even though with the job market, it's pretty difficult. And the next thing is this, people are thinking in the future. So they're worried, fear comes in the future of not knowing what's happening. Let them know, we're not doing this. We're not going anywhere. We're going to be here, but I expect you to do this. I expect you to get on Zoom with your clients. I expect you to call them this many times a week and let them know these things. Keep making that activity. And if you don't call on new people, someone else is. And if you're not present with your clients, someone else will be. It is really that simple. Leadership sets the tone, sets the example, has to live it in spite of the emotions, the fear that they have. And you know, at all times, be honest. Don't bullshit your people. Be honest. You got limits. You're not Superman or Superwoman. You got limits. Tell them the limits of what you know. Mm-hmm. As we know it right now, we're going to still be in business doing these things as we know them right now.
Got it. So if you're a leader, you can kind of instill that confidence in your people by, of course, telling the truth, being transparent, and being confident. Kind of confidence trickles down to your people. And then, as you mentioned, if your employees are scared, they're not on the phone trying to build those relationships with the employees. They're, yeah, looking, how am I going to feed my kids next week? I'm going to go get a different job. So your confidence as a leader will trickle down to your salespeople. And then those salespeople, in turn, that confidence will trickle down to those potential prospects. And as you mentioned, Bill, if you don't have this kind of proactive or defensive strategy of reaching out to these clients during uncertainty, the competition will kind of seep in. Will you tell us how they kind of get into those cracks?
Nature abhors a vacuum, doesn't allow a vacuum. So there's not going to be a space for very long. And that space across the table is going to be occupied by someone who has the heart, who has the desire and the way to get in front of people. And that way is this way. Don't push. And people think, you know, I'm a driver because everything to me always looks, you know, I'm a hammer, so everything looks like a nail. But by not pushing, by having a lot of activity, by saying, all I want to do is become acquainted. Next call, all I want to do is send some information. You're working incrementally toward yes instead of that one by the neck close. So you're playing a long game, and inside the long game is the short one. Because now over the months and the years, you've got so many people you're acquainted with, so many people who find value in what you're saying, you have more opportunity to gain ingress or sit across the desk. You've got to stay present. You've got to bring value. You've got to ask to be able to do non-threatening things to keep in contact and let them be the final arbiter of value. I will say to people, if you don't find value in what I send you, in what I give you, I'll take you off my list and I'll never call you again. Give the power where the power really is. And you'd be shocked at how many people say, keep sending it, come and see me.
Great. And I think this applies, we're kind of been speaking in the context of salespeople who are out there, how do you phrase it? Eating what they kill. So kind of those salespeople that are going all the way from cold to the close. But I think in the experience of like an SDR role or somebody like that, if you're doing account-based prospecting, this still 100% applies because you cannot be going in for the kill. You can't be going in with that hard sale, as you say, on the first email. Your responsibility still is to develop this relationship, to share value, to share information, to kind of nurture this down the line. And eventually there will come a time where, as you say, Bill, you can say, you know, if this is not a fit, if this doesn't seem valuable, you can absolutely pull the plug. And they'll say, you know what, it does seem like a fit. It does seem like it might be something we want to try out. And then they'll have that call with the account executive. So I think all of these ideas apply to any kind of sales role.
And to your point, because it's a great point, here's the segue. Change the inflection of your voice and lighten up on it, because everybody sounds the same. Everybody comes with the same thing. I've got some, and you all sound like we're a little bit uptight. We want to do something. Just kind of relax. You know what I used to say? I bet you get 100 of these calls a day and you probably don't want to take this one. The guy was start laughing. And then I would say, you know, but I'm different. And I know you've heard that, but I want to prove it to you because all I want to do is one thing and that's it. I just want to send you this. And mm-hmm. they're like, okay, but I know we sound the same, but that's what I'm asking for. And I know it's huge to make an ask, but that's it. But use humor, goof around a little bit. We take it, some of, even my people, they get so serious about what they're doing. This isn't going to kill you. Get out there and have fun. Make it a game. It's just a game. But we don't want to be rejected. We have to understand that rejection is part of what it takes to drive those cars and live in those places and enjoy that type of lifestyle that we can only dream about unless we have directed activity that brings us a result.
Absolutely. So yeah, we've kind of gone over all the different ways that fear exists right now and how you absolutely, above all, just need to maintain your confidence. And there are different ways that you're going to be able to do that. As a salesperson, it's going to be making sure that you're kind of ahead of your activities so that you're not dealing with that fear of ending the quarter with under quota. If you're a leader, you need to kind of take stock of what's going on, share it with your people, show that if you're not going anywhere, tell your people you're not going anywhere, but then set those expectations and make sure that they still know that they still have to do what they usually had to do, or maybe some kind of variation on that, depending on what's going on right now. But ultimately, the most important thing is confidence, and that confidence is going to trickle down from the leadership to the salespeople to the employees down all the way to the prospects. And if you want to learn more about these ideas of fear and the relationship between fear and danger, all of that kind of stuff, I think you're going to want to pick up a copy of this book, and we're going to link it for you guys. So Fail More, which is Bill Wittich's Wall Street Journal bestseller. We'll link it for you if you guys want to learn more about that. But thank you so much, Bill, for going into that with me and for our listeners. I think it's incredibly topical right now. And it's incredible to know, most of all, that we've got the resources to combat it right here. We don't necessarily need to pick up a book, but it would help maybe. But to know that, as you're saying, to kind of pull out of the lizard brain into the prefrontal cortex, is that right?
Yeah, you're rolling.
There you go. We've got it right in our brains.
and you just remember this as humans, right? We have two buckets of fear. We're loss and change. We fear loss, we fear change. We learned those because as babies, we only had two fears, the fear of falling and the fear of loud noises. But social norms, parents, teachers, peers, media, we've learned to have those fears. We don't want to lose something, we don't want to change, but we have to be able to understand where that comes from and why it's important to change and why it's important to risk intelligently.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Amazing. Sarah. Yeah, thank you so much, Bill. If people want to get in touch with you and learn more, where can they do that?
BillWittich.com. It's WOODITCH, BillWittich.com, or at Bill Wittich. It's one word.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Bill. And thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in to this episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. See you again next time.
Thanks, Sarah.
All right. Shout out to Predictable Revenue's Service LinkedIn Outbound Service for sponsoring this video. As a founder and sales leader myself, I know most of the best practices in terms of like what I need to be doing on LinkedIn, but sometimes I just don't have the time. You know what the right things to do are, but it just comes down to a trade-off of where's my time better spent? And can I find somebody to click around on LinkedIn for me and book meetings, you know, and then I can focus on higher level activities. And so think about it. What's the best use of your time? If you're a founder, sales leader, and you have a team, you need some meetings, I'd encourage you to check it out. I'm using it myself. I'm obviously the founder, so I'm eating our own dog food. But if you're curious, click the link below to learn more.